Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Transatlanticist at the Amerikazentrum in Hamburg. As always, I am your host, Andrew Sola. Last week, 113 million Americans cast their votes in the midterm elections, a record number, and analysts are still debating what the results mean for the U.S. and the rest of the world. Although it is perhaps still too early to draw a conclusion about the significance of the midterm elections on global affairs, it is definitely not too early to discuss the impact of Trump's economic policies during the first 2 years of his administration. Indeed, when Americans voted, they voted during a period of strong economic growth. The U.S. Commerce Department reported that the economy grew by over 3% in the first two quarters of 2018. Furthermore, unemployment is at record lows. Since Trump's inauguration in 2016, over 3.7 million jobs were added to the economy, and the unemployment rate is at 3.7%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Lastly, wage growth seems to be increasing between 2 and 3% a year, although some do argue that wages ought to be increasing even more. Despite the strength of the U.S. economy, many political analysts were surprised that Trump did not focus more forcefully on this subject during the run-up to the midterm elections. Today, however, we will focus almost exclusively on understanding the U.S. economy, U.S. trade relations, and Trump's economic policies. And here with me to help us explain Trump's trade policies is one of Europe's leading economists, Herr Professor Dr. Gabriel Felbermayr.
Hi.
Welcome, Professor Felbermayr.
Hi.
Professor Felbermayr studied economics at the University of Linz and then received his PhD from the European University Institute in Florence, Italy. Since 2010, he has been the director of the Center for International Economics at the IFO Institute in Munich. And since 2011, he has been a professor of economics at the University of Munich. He will become the new president of the Kiel Institute for the World Economy, and we're delighted he's moving to Northern Germany. He is also a member of the Board of Academic Advisors to the German Federal Ministry for Economic Affairs and Energy. So, Professor Felbermayr, international economics is a complicated and confusing subject. So before we get too complicated, I'd like us to talk about the big picture. What are the most important changes to U.S. economic policy that Donald Trump has made during his first 2 years in the White House?
Yeah, so first of all, he came up with the largest tax reform of the last decades, which really provided an enormous fiscal stimulus to the U.S. economy. And many of the positive results that we're seeing these days are due to that tax reform. He also changed the tone quite dramatically on U.S. trade policy, where his predecessor, Barack Obama, tried to strike trade deals with the United States or with 11 other Pacific Rim states. Trump follows a different approach, a more muscular approach, if you like, one that puts American interests more visibly first than that was the case before. There's been a change in substance, but also a change in tone. Maybe the change in tone is even more important than the change in substance. And the change in tone involves a president who is very active on Twitter, who does not follow the usual diplomatic protocol, which has been very important in trade policy, where you talk to other leaders in ballrooms of luxury hotels behind closed doors. You do make your threats. I mean, their negotiations often turn tough, but the public doesn't learn about it. Now we see trade policy conducted if you like, in real time with the president, who comments and discusses every move every evening or every morning over Twitter. That is something that the world has not seen before.
Very interesting. You mentioned the tax cuts, and that is one of my questions. As I noted in the introduction, the U.S. economy seems to be very strong. Unemployment is low, growth is high, wages are increasing. And indeed, Trump and the Republican-controlled Congress passed large tax cuts at the end of 2017. Indeed, Trump has claimed that these tax cuts led to corporations moving over $300 billion back to the U.S. from foreign subsidies. And you just mentioned that some of the strength of the U.S. economy is due to that. So I want to dig into this a little bit more. What is the real impact of these tax cuts on the U.S. economy, both for the average American and also for U.S. corporations?
Yeah. So it is clear that those tax cuts are big enough to really move behavior, both of households, savers, investors, and of corporations. The fact that the Tax Act has indeed led companies to repatriate profits from abroad per se is not a growth stimulus, because the question is whether this money is indeed invested or not. But we have seen relatively strong investment growth in the United States in the year of 2018 following the entry into force of the Tariff Act. We've also seen strong price increases in the area of investment goods, so investment has become more expensive. The question is, yes, there's been more spending, but to what extent have productive capacities actually increased? That's something we will see in the course of the next years, I guess. We also observe a relatively strong increase in government, in the federal government's deficit. A lot of these tax cuts are not funded, and the government has to borrow more on financial markets. So what we see is a type of Keynesian deficit spending, which is, one might argue, ill-timed, because even before 2018, the U.S. economy was doing reasonably well. And it is unusual to come forward with such a strong deficit spending in a period where growth is robust, share prices are up, the real estate markets are in a healthy shape, unemployment is going down. That has already happened in 2017. And so the question remains, are these positive effects that the tax cuts have brought, are they sustainable? And will we see those effects to continue in the next 2 years of Trump's presidency?
I'll ask you about the future very soon, but I do want to talk about the deficit since you mentioned it. The tax cuts indeed have increased the federal deficit quite a bit. Is this something that should concern us?
Yes, I think it should concern us. It means that the U.S. is borrowing heavily on international markets. It means that the additional demand that comes about by this borrowing drives up the U.S. economy maybe into a situation of overheating, which might provoke the Federal Reserve to increase interest rates faster than it would have done otherwise. And that provokes repercussions, in particular in emerging markets. So the strong deficit spending, the interest rate reaction to that by the Fed is a problem for many emerging markets. And we have seen crises this year in Argentina, in Turkey, not so much in the press, issues also in India, Indonesia, Thailand, where those interest rate increases in the United States driven by deficit spending have caused quite some havoc.
Okay, so it is actually a world issue, not just...
It is a world issue. It's potentially also an issue for the United States, because what goes up too fast has to come down even more dramatically. So we are a little bit worried that the United States economy might be overheating and that the next recession might be more dramatic than it would need to be.
Okay, I want to move to Donald Trump's focus on Europe now. And there are a couple of issues here that have been raised. The first was rebalancing trade with Germany and Europe, and the second was energy security in Nord Stream 2. So first, let's look at rebalancing trade with Germany and Europe. President Trump has been critical of EU trade policies. For example, he complained that Germany's economy is too export-driven. Furthermore, he has argued that there are too many German cars in the U.S. and not enough American cars. And lastly, he has said that the United States' $151 billion trade surplus with Europe is a big problem. What do you think about President Trump's concerns about these trade imbalances with Europe?
I think these concerns are themselves not very balanced because they focus on a very narrow area of economic activity, essentially on the manufacturing sector, which accounts for less than 20% of U.S. employment. And it doesn't really look at the strengths of the U.S. economy in the much larger services sectors, which is very diverse. But of course, it is so big, and in that sector, the U.S. have a very visible comparative advantage. So yes, in manufacturing, in goods trade, the U.S. is running a deficit of $150 or so billion U.S. dollars with Europe. But if you look at services, there's a surplus of $60 billion U.S. dollars. And if you look at primary income, which is the net income that U.S. companies generate in Europe relative to the income that European companies generate in the United States, we have another $110 or so billion U.S. dollar surplus of the United States. And so we need to add these things up. So the economic relationship is not just goods trade, it's also services trade, and it's also the activities of U.S. multinationals in Europe. So if you do that, what you find is a much more balanced relationship, which is actually in surplus. From the United States perspective, the United States' current account, as we economists say, has been in surplus of $14 billion U.S. dollars in 2017, and it has been in surplus consistently since 2009. And so we're worried that, you know, in the American debate, the focus is too much on that sector, where the United States is indeed not a world leader, and the Americans forget about their strengths, which are very much in the services sector.
Thank you for that explanation. I learned a lot there. I'm no economist, I must add. But let's move on to energy security and Nord Stream 2. So another criticism the Trump administration has had with Germany is its support of the pipeline project. Nord Stream 2 will create a new gas pipeline between Russia and Europe, thereby partially or fully bypassing an existing pipeline that goes through the Ukraine. Trump has claimed that Europe is already too reliant on Russian energy. Also, the Trump administration has claimed that Nord Stream 2 will allow Russia to hold Germany captive to its gas supplies, undermining European sovereignty. So what do you make of these concerns?
I think there are two points to be made. First, I think Trump's analysis is correct. By relying so much on natural gas from Russia, Germany makes itself vulnerable to a holdup. And it would be in Germany's interest to diversify away from that source of energy. And that is happening to some extent, as the European continent is building terminals to accommodate supply of liquid natural gas, for example, from Qatar, but also from US sources. So that is happening. But I think the U.S. administration is wrong in thinking that Nord Stream 2 changes much. What it does is it bypasses Ukraine. And that might not be in the interest of U.S. foreign policy, which wants to see Ukraine strengthened politically and economically. But it does not per se change anything to the situation, which is already now that the Germans import a lot of Russian gas. It's just through a different route. What the Nord Stream 2 project does is it makes Germany less vulnerable to a holdup by Ukraine, which has in the past sometimes disrupted gas supply. And in that sense, it is a project that contributes to German energy security.
Interesting. So there's a third issue that just has come up because last week, of course, the sanctions against Iran went back into effect. So this is the third big area where U.S. foreign policy and EU trade relations are strained. So again, Trump pulled the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear deal. And last week, those economic sanctions against Iran were reimposed. The EU has suggested that they would stay in the deal and also help European companies sidestep penalties for doing business with Iran. So what do you think will happen with these sanctions? And how do you think both the EU and European companies will respond or react to these sanctions?
So we already see that European businesses are pulling out of Iran. So I think the extraterritorial ambitions that the US have with their sanction regime work. And the counter instruments that the European Commission has announced, so this blocking regulation that they are using, is not working. Indeed, the economic logic is very clear. For almost all European firms doing business in Iran, losing an American client or being blocked from the United States market is so much more costly than losing a contract in Iran that in this conflict, the U.S. simply has the better arguments.
Okay. So one last situation of conflict is all this talk of trade wars.
Yeah.
So using even the phrase trade wars is dangerous and problematic. I'm a scholar of war, in fact, in the ethics of war and peace. So trade wars, to me, are a lot different than real wars. Nevertheless, everyone seems to be talking about Trump's trade wars with China, with Mexico and Canada, which might be resolved, and again, with the EU. So what is the rationale behind Trump's trade wars? And what do you think the outcome of these policies will be?
So I think we need to recognize that the world is a very asymmetric one, in the sense that the U.S. have very low import tariffs against most countries, against the EU and against China for sure. And that is not entirely reciprocated. So in cars, for example, the EU has a 10% import tariff, the US 2.5%, and China used to have a 25% import tariff. Now the question is, how do you negotiate those asymmetries away? And the usual logic in trade negotiations is to exchange concessions. That's how the trade lawyers term it. In the sense that I would, if I were the EU, I would grant American suppliers better access to my market, and I would ask for the same from the United States. Now, if the United States have already given everything away, those negotiations cannot really work. They could get a, let's say, 2.5 percentage point reduction in the 10% import tariff in Europe, and the Europeans would demand the same in the United States. But that would keep the asymmetry in place. So how do you escape that dilemma? Well, you need to sidestep the traditional protocol, which has always been, if negotiations fail, we fall back to the status quo. But what Trump says is, if negotiations fail, we go to a different state of the world, to a world where the United States imposes high tariffs on cars, for example. 25% tariffs are under discussion, or even move to some situation of further escalation, like with China. So that changes the game in a very dramatic manner. But from a game theoretic point of view, from a negotiation theory point of view, that's what Trump has to do if he wants to level the playing field. If he wants to get rid of the asymmetries, he really has to change the game. And so far, we must say, he has been relatively successful. If you look at how NAFTA has been renegotiated, or how he has been dealing with Korea, you know, his muscular approach actually delivers and helps him fulfill his promises. Whether that is good for the U.S. economy is a very different question, though.
Okay, and let's talk about the future of the U.S. economy. In the next 2 years, do you foresee continued growth and economic stability in the U.S., or do you see something darker in the horizon?
I think the next 2 years still look reasonably good. After that, we see some of the provisions in the 2017 Tax Act expire. So that would lead to the opposite of a fiscal stimulation, to a fiscal, let's call it austerity package. You know? So that would be a drag on U.S. growth. And it might coincide with the end of a very long and very positive business cycle. We had good growth now in almost all OECD countries over 9 years. And that will come to an end. And it will maybe coincide with that expiration of tax cuts. So for the re-election of Donald Trump, that probably will not matter much because the next, let's say, six quarters still look quite okay. A lot of the outlook is uncertain, though, because the world is losing confidence. We're seeing a slowdown in the Eurozone. We see also a slowdown in China. But the United States economy is relatively closed, so the international picture is not so important to the United States than it would be for Germany, for example. And so as long as fiscal and monetary policy remain in place in a growth-stimulating way, the bonanza goes on. But when tariffs, when the interest rates have to be increased faster and stronger than planned, and if the fiscal stimulus expires, then we'll see maybe a mild recession in the United States beyond 2021, I think.
Okay. Let's move on to just one topic related to Germany. Do you think Merkel's coming resignation will have much of an effect on transatlantic relations or the EU-ES trade relationship?
So that, I think, depends a lot who will be the next chancellor. Now we have a couple of names around. Friedrich Merz is very active in the Atlantikbrücke, so that's a transatlanticist organization. And so he has very strong credentials here, stronger credentials, I think, than Angela Merkel. So a Chancellor Merz will probably be helpful. For the other two candidates in the race, I'm not so sure about that. I think Kram Kaunbauer is in a sense, following very similar policies than those that Merkel followed. And Jens Spahn, we simply don't know his position. So it really depends who will be Merkel's successor. One thing seems very likely, though. You know, the first 2 years of Trump's presidency have led to a lot of disappointment in Germany. The tone has been relatively rough, and this will leave traces. So whoever will be the next chancellor, dealing with the United States will be different than 2 years before. A lot of people will be more cautious. There will be more skepticism. And that probably is true regardless of who will follow Angela Merkel.
Okay, thanks. Very interesting. Okay, let's move on to my last question. And this is a question I ask all of my guests. I always like to ask my guests about important issues that do not get enough attention from policymakers and scholars and the media. So everyone discusses climate change, NATO, immigration, Russia, tariffs, trade wars, and so on. However, there are really important issues that do not get enough attention. So, Professor Felbermayr, what is an important issue in either transatlantic relations or international trade that we are not paying enough attention to and that we should be paying much more attention to?
Well, there's a whole array of issues that would need more attention, I think. I'm a trade economist, and I think many of the discussions that we have on trade today, much of the globalization skepticism, not just in the United States, but in many, many countries, is due to the failure of our national policies to deal with shocks. They could be trade shocks, because it could also be technology shocks. And I think, you know, what we need to do in our economies is to have a much more rigorous discussion about how in the future we will deal with these shocks, because they will be coming. Maybe, you know, the China shock is over now, and we'll talk about digital economy related shocks, technology shocks. And we need to make our economies more resilient to those so that our democratic systems endure. That is not simply done by spending more on social programs. That's what social democrats in Europe often think, right? Mm-hmm. But it has to be much broader. We need to rethink education, probably. Lifelong learning is one major issue. We also think how we deal with the rural and urban areas, because the urban areas have been doing well, the rural areas have not been doing well. So how do we heal the cleavages that have arisen there. So you know, the social fabric, if you like, needs to be prepared such that it becomes more resilient to economic disruption in the future.
A fascinating area that indeed we should all spend much more attention to. Thank you again, Professor Felbermayr. That was a fascinating discussion.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The Transatlanticist. If you enjoy the show, please support us by subscribing for free with iTunes, TuneIn, or your podcast provider. If you would like to provide comments, suggest topics, or recommend guests, I'd love to hear from you. Please send me an email at asola@americacentrum.de. And remember, the views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the guests or the host, not the America Centrum, which does not take any institutional positions on politics or policy. Thanks again for listening.